Can anyone tell me why in the Gurukul system we do work, you know, cleaning and this and that? Yes.
Makes you humble.
Makes you humble? Okay. Why is it good to be humble?
Because it's...
Sorry?
You can be humble and teach us the teaching. You can be humble and teach people. You get the attitude to learn.
You have the attitude to learn, okay? Okay. So in other words, unless, what means Krishna in the Gita is explaining that without doing service, then you can't actually study very nicely, right? You won't be able to learn because you won't have the capacity, right? So the idea is that you've learned something in the class, right? Then you're going to contemplate, you're going to use it, right? So now, since some of the times you're using, you know, things that they aren't directly, I'll say, it's not like you hear something about chanting or something and then you go and use it, or you hear something else about some other qualities and then you use it. You know, you're learning, you know, your ABCs or your numbers or this or that. So then along with it, one does extra service, you know, cleaning or, you know, cooking or whatever it is that is there. And that then makes it so that one is able actually to learn. Because then in the learning process, you have to be able to, like you said, humility, then take it to the next where you actually inquire. You want to know how to make it work, why it works. Right? And then in that position, then you actually, you know, get somewhere. You know all this, right, Mr. What is it? La Tercera. Yeah? Oh, he's got that's that name. Okay. Why, he's got different names? So that's his first name? What's that one say?
Zero posur. Zero ex posur.
Zero ex posur.
Posur. P-O-S-U-R.
Posur. Posur is just a earlier form of asur or something. The posuric age, and then it... Then it went to the Jasuric age, and now it's the Asuric age, like that kind of thing. Okay. So, does that make sense? So, one's qualification in class is one's actually ability to work. You can see without a doubt, there's 100% no exceptions to this rule. Those who have a good service attitude, they are good in their classes and do well. And those that don't have a good service attitude do not do well in their class. I've been watching this over 25 years, and it's 100% correct. There's no exceptions. I've never seen one exception. You understand? So that's why then one is coming in the morning, one's doing one's service and all that, and then after that we start the classes, right? And then in the evening, then there's service and these things, and then you have those classes. Middle of the day, you're doing something like that. So all through the day, it goes back and forth between work, class, work, class, work, class, right? Because by that, then that balance, then one's classes go very nicely. Just like now, we have one less class, we do more service, but the class, we're getting more from the classes than we did before when we had more classes, less service. You understand? Yeah, does that make sense? Yes? You all understand? Yeah? Okay. So that's why when you have service, you should focus on it. Do it nicely, because if you can focus on your service, means you can focus on anything. Focus on your chanting, focus on your classes, focus on dealing with people properly. Because if you can't do service, you actually won't be able to have proper relationships with people either. Right? Because having a any kind of interaction with other people means you have to be conscious, you have to be focused, you have to be able to do an activity, right? Because relationship means interaction, no? Right? Someone sits over here, someone sits over there, they never look at each other, never talk to each other, never interact. That's a relationship? No, relationship means one person, another person, they're interacting. Right? So that means you have to be focused enough to notice what the other person's mood is, what it is that they're, you know, doing or thinking or their attitude, right? Then you can interact with them properly. Does that make sense? Right? So that comes from having a proper service attitude. Otherwise, that's service. Working in a relationship, maintaining a relationship is service, right? It's activity. So unless you have a good service attitude, you can't have good relationships. Right? So just as if you don't have a good service attitude, you won't have a proper relationship with knowledge. In the same way as you won't have a proper a relationship with other people. And even that, you won't even have a proper relationship with other things, because you'll never take the energy to make it work. Yeah? Yes? No? Is this all understood? Right, that's why we have to do these things. It's work. But that extra bit of work is what makes the difference. You know? Does that make sense? Yes? No? Okay. What group are you in? Who's your boss? He's your boss. He's in your group, the Kiwi. But the next one? He's in your group. Basically, he's not qualified to be in this class today because today he didn't. I can't say he didn't do any work. He did pick up the broom for 30 seconds. Well, actually, it's probably more like 25, and sweep for a little bit while either you came by or somebody came by. The rest of the time, he simply was making little bows and arrows and stuff like that, and thinking it was pretty cool. Right, but that's all he did for the whole time. Stood in one place. He did at one point. He was facing that way. At one time, he turned around and faced this way. Like that. So if you could give him something to do now, you know, he could do some work. You know, you come back, but give him something to do, because otherwise he won't get anything from the class, and so he'll just be wasting, you know, everybody's time. So you go with him now. Huh? Okay. Does that make sense? You were doing your work, or you were also doing nothing? You did more than him. So he did 25 seconds, you did 37 seconds. But you did, okay. You understand? Be more serious. You guys, there's plenty of time to play. Right? Means the lunch is at 2:30, we don't even start the evening work till 4, right? Means, why is that extra time left in there? That's your time. You want to run around, kill each other, make bows and arrows, pick your nose, whatever it is that's important to you. That's your time, right? You know, Wednesdays, there's extra time, Saturdays, Sundays. So we try to put in time for proper service, you know, and sadhana, time for academics, time for, you know, other things, and time for you to be able to space out. But in the morning before this class, that's not the time to space out. This is the time to focus. You can focus now, you can focus anytime. You can't focus now, you'll never be able to focus. Does that make sense? Yes? So if we can be a little bit more conscious. Right? There's so much to do here, but not so much gets done because everybody is not paying attention. If you pay attention, so much more gets done. Yes? Who does the morning class, the mantra class for the small boys? Chaitanya. Okay, so your mats for that class are in Vagisha's godown. So then you take them from there, take them up, use them when you finish, roll them up, put them in the godown. Because if after the class they're sitting on the roof, then Sudamaji will put them in his godown. And then if you want to sit on something, then you got to go find him, and he'll be busy in class, so you'll have to wait. Okay? Does that make sense for all of you? Yes? Okay. Ah, Abhay started a Sankirtan movement in Jhansi. At first, accompanied only by Acharya Prabhakar, he used to walk about the neighborhood of Naibhasti, chanting Hare Krishna. As he continued this practice, his group gradually increased until 50 people were gathering regularly to go out on parikrama, chant together and visit temples. Afterwards, they would gather at the Radha Memorial for an evening lecture. Oh, okay. When Abhay would go to preach in the nearby villages, he would usually be accompanied by whatever league members were free. Once he went with Acharya Prabhakar on Padayatra, traveling on foot and preaching, to Chirgaon, some 20 miles from Jhansi. In Chirgaon, there lived a nationally known poet, Maithili Sharan Gupta, who received Abhay and his disciple at his home for dinner. Abhay told his host that since he was an accomplished poet, he should write something glorifying Krishna, and the poet agreed. After preaching in Chirgaon, Abhay and Prabhakar returned to Jhansi, spending one day in each of five villages along the way. At night, the villagers would gather, and Abhay would lead kirtan. He explained to Prabhakar that although most of these simple farmers were not scholars in Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam, they could achieve the highest spiritual benefits simply by kirtan. Abhay was well received by the villagers, who begged him to return soon, but to give them notice next time so that they could prepare a proper reception. While preaching locally, Abhay was simultaneously working to give an international scope to his league of devotees. He wrote to government agencies asking them to help him expand his genuine educational project. He also tried to recruit preachers from amongst his friends. He wrote to his old college classmate, Rupin Mitra, in Calcutta, inviting him to join in worldwide missionary activities. And from the letter, "My mission desires to train up to 40 trainees, and I have asked help from the government for this useful educational purpose. I want that you may be one of the trainees in this regard, and you can ask Kartik Dada to join us in this spirit. You will know from the papers sent to you how we live and what we do, and thus you can make up your mind whether it is possible for you to join us. The first thing is that we want to train up some retired men in the vanaprastha life and some young men in the brahmachari life. I have no inclination for the sannyas life, which is rather a difficult job for the fallen people of this age. The so-called sannyasis in red garments have spoiled the good name of such order of life. Abhay also asked Rupin, kindly let me know the charges of the advertisement in the English and vernacular papers of Calcutta." Okay, so this looks like his ad for the newspaper in Calcutta. "Wanted candidates from any nationality to qualify themselves as real brahmanas for preaching the teachings of Bhagavad Gita for all practical purposes throughout the whole world. Deserving candidates will be provided with free boarding and lodging. Apply, A.C. Bhaktivedanta, founder and secretary of the League of Devotees, Bharati Bhavan, Post Office, Jhansi, UP." So you see, it's always education. Prabhupada is seeing this as education. He would many times call his disciples students, right? Because they're studying Krishna consciousness, studying the shastras, studying the lifestyle of Krishna consciousness. So that's education. So the Vedic culture is based on knowledge, and that knowledge then has to be taught. So education becomes the foundation of the whole Vedic culture. That's why it's called Brahminical culture, because for Brahmins, knowledge is the prominent thing, right? So education becomes, therefore, the most, you know, important element. If someone is educated, has proper knowledge, then so many things he can do, right? Very many practical things he can all do and everything like that. Yes? No? Maybe not so important. Yeah? Okay, so that should be always understood, is that very important thing. Education is very, very prominent. Otherwise, we tend to think that other activities are more prominent, right? It means if you hear, then you can speak, right? But if you don't learn, what are you going to speak? You can say preaching is important, but that's chanting. So what does that mean? What has to be before chanting? Yeah, shravanam. Shravanam, then kirtanam. Right? So you can't separate them. It's not that kirtanam happens on its own. Let's say I have a glass. It's empty. Can I pour anything out of the glass? Yes? No? Okay, what's the first thing I have to do? Fill it up. Yeah, you put something in the glass, then however much is in is what you can pour out. Right? So we hear. We hear philosophy. We hear the Lord's pastimes, you know, all these different things, the glories of his name, form, qualities, pastimes. Then we can go out and speak these things. We can preach these things. Right? Does that make sense? So education is very, very important in that way. Right? From there, then remembering the Lord, all these things will naturally come. So if the Shravanam and Kirtanam is there, everything else will follow. Yes? So that's why he's presenting that this is education. He said for useful educational purpose or real educational purpose, genuine educational project, right? So, you know, he's trying to point out this is real education. Other things are nice, but this is what has some, this is solid. Abhai wanted a deed stating that the Bharati Bhavan belonged to the League of Devotees. So far, he had only a promise. Thinking of Jhansi as a permanent headquarters, he wanted a written commitment. When he approached Reva Shankar Bhayal for a deed of gift, Mr. Bhayal gave Abhai a form requesting him to pay 500 rupees to register the buildings. But since Abhai had just suffered a loss of 7,000 rupees in Allahabad and had recently spent 3,000 rupees in his preaching, much of it going towards the opening day festival, he found himself unable to raise even 500 rupees. Acharya Prabhakar, despite his academic position, had very little money and was being subsidized by his parents with 3 rupees a day. Right, so for 3 rupees a day, then he was able to take care of himself. Most of Abhai's congregation, especially the students, were in a similar position. Mr. Bhayal's request for 500 rupees didn't seem urgent, nor did he say, what would happen if Abhai couldn't pay? But he soon made another request. Mr. Abhai Charanday should buy the Bharati Bhavan for 5,000 rupees. It was disconcerting. The generous gift had turned into a purchase offer. People in town were already referring to the property as Abhai Bhaktivedanta's ashram, and the League of Devotees was printed in large letters across the wall of the compound. When pressed by Abhai's friends, Mr. Abhai assured them that Abhai could go on living there, but ultimately he would have to buy. Mr. Bhayal said he would give the League of Devotees first consideration and a good price. Abhai, worried, not knowing what the landlord would do next. If the League could purchase the property, that would be best, but he had been unable to raise even 500 rupees. 5,000 seemed impossible. Abhai found no strong financial backing from his congregation. His League did not include even a single full-time worker. He did not know of one way to raise money. His pharmaceutical business. He still had a small operation being run by his son in Calcutta. Abhai had formerly been earning 3,000 rupees a month. He considered approaching God Brothers for help, but the prospects for earning the money himself seemed more likely. For 30 years, he had earned money by his pharmaceutical business. He could do it again for the most worthy cause. When he arrived in Calcutta in the spring of 1954, he was without money. He chose to live with his godbrothers at the Gaudiya Sangha in Chetla, the same neighborhood his family lived in. Chetla Bazaar. Chetla. I just don't remember where Chetla Bazaar is. Since he had no money, the head of the ashram bore his expenses. Abhai gave daily discourses on Srimad Bhagavatam, which the Gaudiya Sangha Brahmacharis highly appreciated. Krishna Kumar Brahmachari. Even after he left, his sweet, melodious voice would ring in my ears. He used to often express a desire to go abroad and preach. One of his sons was running a small business, Vimaltone Laboratory, and thus supporting the family. Abai knew that his wife would not be interested in his work in Jhansi. His son had been there, but had not been impressed. The family would see his preaching in Jhansi as a threat to their home life. Abai, however, was sustaining himself by his vision, which was now taking practical shape, of a world reformed by Krishna consciousness. He even thought of opening a branch of the League of Devotees in Calcutta. But eventually he was plunged again into family responsibilities. Some of his children were still unmarried. Rent and bills had to be paid. Even if he were to develop the Vimaltone Laboratory, the family would demand whatever he earned. And even if he were to accede to their demands, live at home and give up preaching, the greatest difficulty would still remain. They weren't serious about devotional service, nor could he change them. What was the use of conducting a business if they would not be devotees? He visited his family, and the same old scene occurred. Local friends came to visit, and Abai began preaching, giving Bhagavad Gita classes just as he had been doing in Jhansi. Meanwhile, his wife and the rest of the family would take tea in a separate room. Srila Prabhupada. I wanted as much as possible to get her to work with me in spreading Krishna consciousness, to get her help. But she was very determined. She wouldn't help me in spreading Krishna consciousness. So finally, after many years, I could understand she would not be any assistance to me. She was very attached to drinking tea. I was always telling her not to drink tea because I wanted to have a nice Vaishnava family. So although I was repeatedly telling her, this time I finally said, you have to choose between me or tea. Either the tea goes or I go. In this way, I was even criticizing my own family. But because they were thinking I was the husband or father, they couldn't take my instructions seriously. So she replied, give up tea drinking or give up my husband. Well, I will have to give up my husband then. I will have to give up my husband then. Of course, she thought I was joking. One day, Radharani made a great mistake. There was a system of barter in which a customer could place on a scale an object a shopkeeper considered valuable, and the shopkeeper would balance it with an equal weight of merchandise. So while Abai was out, his wife took his worshipable Bhagavatam to the market and traded it for tea biscuits. When Abai came home and looked for the book, she told him what had happened. She hadn't taken the matter as a very serious thing. She was out of tea biscuits. But Abai was shocked. At first, he felt depressed. But then a wave of absolute resolution passed over him. His family life was finished. Right? So don't take it as it. Don't take these things lightly. Right? When he told them he was leaving, they didn't understand what he meant. He had been leaving for 30 years. He was always coming and going. When he walked out the door, they thought, there he goes again, he's leaving. It was the usual routine. Everyone can see, even the neighbors. Mr. Day was going again. He had been at home. Now he was going. He would be back again. But Abai knew he would never come back. Right? So when he said he's going, they just thought it's another routine going. They didn't understand this meant that this was it going. Right? You know. Srila Prabhupada. Before leaving my family, I wanted to get all my sons and daughters married, but some of them disagreed. But then, the time is up. Never mind whether they are married or not. Let them see to their own business. Suppose I die immediately, who would take care of my daughter? At that time we say, God will take care. Then why not now? God will take care. My Guru Maharaj used to say that renunciation of family life was civil suicide. If you commit suicide, that is criminal. But that renunciation of family is voluntarily committing suicide. Now I am dead. Whatever you like, you do. Right? Because he's making the point that if he died, then they would have to take care of themselves anyway. So sannyas means then it's civil suicide. It means you're dead to the social system. right? So you're not part of that scene. So then they have to take care of themselves. It's just the way it is. Krishna says, Sarva Dharmam Parityaja. Give up all religion. So family is Griha Dharma, the religion of the family. But Krishna says, give that up. But that attachment is there. And if we say that feeling of attachment has to be given up gradually, then that we cannot do, because the attachment is there. But if God will take care of them, if I die immediately, then why not now? Right, so Prabhupada's saying is that we're supposed to give up everything, all dharma, and so the griha dharma is one of them. You're just supposed to take up just devotional service. So he's saying is that we can say, okay, we'll give up gradually, but the problem, the attachment's there, so we never do. So his point is therefore, since we have to give up at some point, and it would gradually happen, why not now, right? So, because the time has already passed, right? His spiritual emotions were so turbulent that he wasn't thinking of going to Jhansi. He wanted to take a train to anywhere. Then he remembered some old godbrother friends who were living in an ashram in Jargram, only a short train ride south of Calcutta. So he borrowed 10 rupees from a friend and bought a ticket to Jargram. It was a small mat. When Abai arrived, he was welcomed by Paramahamsa Maharaj, Damodar Maharaj, and others. Paramahamsa Maharaj had been present when Abai had first met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and he remembered Abai as he had looked then, dressed in white khadi, looking like a Gandhian anarchist. Abai explained to him, I couldn't fulfill my family's needs, so now let me preach the message of Lord Chaitanya. Abai told him how his business had failed and how he had willingly left his family and was now destitute. Paramahamsa Maharaj. When Abai arrived, he appeared very poor. Starving, he had no means. He came alone to the mat. And when he arrived, he only chanted Hare Krishna, nothing else. Abai spent his time in Jargram, chanting the holy name and becoming settled in detachment from his family. For several days, he chanted japa almost continuously. Paramahamsa Maharaj would lecture in the evenings. And then Abai would also speak on Bhagavad Gita. But as time passed, his thoughts turned again to Jhansi, and he soon felt ready to go back to the League of Devotees. He had to secure the buildings and go on with the preaching. But before he returned, he obtained a large deity of Lord Chaitanya that he planned to install at the Bharati Bhavan. Ironically, he had gone to Calcutta to do business and raise money, but now he had no money, no business, and no family responsibilities. He had been married 36 years, and now at age 58, he had fully taken to the Vanaprastha order. Now he could dedicate his life fully to preaching Krishna consciousness. Abai did not adopt the saffron dress of a Vanaprastha, but continued wearing a white dhoti and kurta. The people of Jhansi had always known him as a preacher with no family, ever since he had first arrived, a year and a half before. Now he was returning to them with the deity of Lord Chaitanya and a determination to establish Lord Chaitanya's temple in Jhansi. Abai met with warm welcome from Acharya Prabhakar and others, but he also met with competition for possession of the Radha Memorial. It began with a Sanskrit conference, the Bundelkhand Sanskrit Sammelan, which brought to Jhansi the governor of the province, K.M. Munshi, and his wife, Lilavati. An active social organizer, Lilavati Munshi had opened several branches of the Mahila Samiti Sangha, a society that aimed at socially uplifting women by teaching them secretarial skills in English. Two educated Jhansi ladies, Chandramukhi and Suryamukhi, wanted such a woman's social program for Jhansi, and they took the opportunity to approach Lilavati Munshi during her visit. She inspired them, and they began to talk about where in Jhansi they could open one of her social centers. Perhaps, suggested one of the ladies, the Bharati Bhavan could be used. Although Suryamukhi Sharma had been one of the sympathizers who had first approached Mr. Bayal on behalf of Abhay Charan Day and asked that he be given the Bharati Bhavan for his League of Devotees. She felt that the lady's cause was more important. She knew that Abhay's ownership of the buildings was not settled. The women agreed that the buildings would be an excellent facility for the Mahila Samiti Sangha branch, and that their cause was more urgent than Abhay Charan's. Sir Yamukhi, assured of support by the governor's wife, called on A.C. Bhaktivedanta. She explained that his League of Worldwide Vaishnavas would never take shape. He was a nice person, and she liked him, but she didn't think he could realize his extraordinary expectations. She suggested he vacate the Bharati Bhavan so that the governor's wife could organize a women's social center. You can go here and there for the sake of building a temple, she told him. You are free to travel anywhere, but these poor women in Jhansi have nothing, so they must be given these buildings for their use. She found him adamantly opposed. No, Abhay said, find another building. Abhay argued that his work was not just for a section of people, but for all living beings. Suryamukhi left frustrated. Abhay was surprised that a member of the League of Devotees was not working against him, and the maneuver was being backed by the governor's wife. Mrs. Munshi could work at a much more influential level without having to confront Abhay directly and without his even knowing what she was doing. After she talked with Mr. Bayal, word got around that Mr. Bayal had been pressured to persuade Abhay Charan to relinquish his claim on the Bharati Bhavan. Mr. Bayal owned a cinema house in Jhansi, and there was talk that he could have a lot of difficulty with his operator's license unless Abhay Charan vacated the Radha Memorial. In December 1954, Mrs. Munshi wrote Abhay in reference to his failure to raise 5,000 rupees. Dear Bhaktivedantaji, she wrote, you wanted to organize there, but you could not. But I have got this institution, Mahila Samhiti. Why not give it to me? Abhay was of a mind to resist. He had lawyer friends who advised him that even though he was opposed to the governor's family, he had a good case that would stand up well in court. India's tradition of respect for religious buildings was on his side. Abhay replied to Mrs. Munshi, introducing himself as the founder of the League of Devotees. He explained the goal of the League, enclosed a copy of his prospectus, and presented many statements by prominent people. Dr. Rajendra Prasad, Sri Sita Ram, Raja Mahendra Patap, and even her husband, Sri K. M. Munshi, praising the wonderful work of the League of Devotees. He also mentioned that the president of the League had recently received a 100 rupee donation at Mathura from His Excellency the Governor, Mr. Munshi himself. Abhay said that although work had been going on slowly but peacefully in Jhansi, his mind had now been bothered by Mrs. Munshi's negotiations. He requested her not to pressure anyone about his occupying the Bharati Bhavan. Though he admitted, if you or any one of your agents do try, the pressure will be more weightful. I am a non-entity in that comparison. Abhay hoped that his preaching, presenting the details of his League, she would understand that his was a better cause than the Mahila Samhiti. He quoted the first three verses of the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, wherein Lord Krishna describes how the ancient science of Bhakti Yoga is received through parampara, the order of succession from one teacher to the next, and how kings are responsible for seeing that Krishna consciousness spreads for everyone's benefit. He also urged that since, according to Bhagavad Gita, only a few amongst thousands and thousands of men endeavor for self-realization, and since the League of Devotees engaged its members in self-realization, he was providing an important and rare service. He offered to meet with Mrs. Munshi along with some 15 sannyasis from the area and suggested that she work cooperatively with them and understand the importance of the League. The League of Devotees was benefiting all classes. As Sri Krishna had said in Bhagavad Gita, quote, even one of a low birth can obtain the shelter of the Supreme Lord. But the Mahila Samhiti, Abhay pointed out, was based on bodily conception of caste, creed, color, and sex. Therefore, it could not be as important a cause. I closed by requesting Mrs. Munshi not to try to occupy the Radha Memorial, which was already being used for a noble and well-appreciated cause. He signed A.C. Bhaktivedanta, founder and secretary, League of Devotees. Aware that he was involved in an intrigue, Abhai organized his thoughts and set down on paper a short history, outlining important events surrounding a possession of the Bharati Bhavan. So this is the short history, as Prabhupada wrote it. 1. I came to Jhansi sometime in October 1952. 2. I delivered some lectures at Gita Mandir on Gandhi Jayanti Day, 1952. 3. Made acquaintance with Prabhakar Shastri. 4. My idea of League of Devotees implemented. 5. He took me to Reva Shankar for Bharati Bhavan. 6. Sri Reva Shankar agreed to hand over the Bharati Bhavan to League of Devotees, and he agreed to become a member of it in the presence of Prabhakar Mitraji and myself. 7. I write letters from Allahabad to confirm. 8. He confirmed my letter on 10-12-52. 9. Prabhakar intimated the desire of Reva Shankar on 1-1-53. 10. I got the document needed for League of Devotees and came to Jhansi for signature of members. Reva Shankar signed and agreed to become an executive member. 11. The document was submitted for registration on 4-2-53 at Lucknow. Returned on 10-10-53. 12. The League of Devotees ceremoniously started 16-5-53. And work began. So I am occupying the building since then and continuing my work. Abhai went on to enumerate more than 30 points, including news publicity and congratulations he had received. He listed the story of how he, quote, came here sacrificing my business and family. I received a telegram from Allahabad instructing the news of burglary by breaking lock. I could not attend the business for work here, and it was closed subsequently at a loss of rupees 7,000. Abhai thought of turning to some of his sannyasi godbrothers for help, if he or they could purchase the buildings. His competitors would be silenced. He thought it worthwhile to interest his godbrothers in purchasing the buildings as an adjunct to their own missions. Vrindavan was not far away, a four-hour train ride to Mathura, and then a short tunga ride. He had gone there on pilgrimage in October of 53, and had even looked at an available room in a temple near Keshigat, with the idea of staying there someday. He had also traveled there several other times since he had begun residing in Jhansi. This time he went to the Imlital temple to see his godbrother, Bhakti Sharanga Goswami, and ask if he would like to take over the proprietorship of the Bharati Bhavan, so it might be used for preaching Krishna consciousness, according to the teachings of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. But Bhakti Sharanga Goswami was not interested. After approaching another godbrother, Damodar Maharaj, who was not interested in Jhansi, Abhai took the short Sangha ride back to Mathura to see another godbrother, Kesha Maharaj. Kesha Maharaj was in Mathura with a group of his disciples to establish a center, but he had not yet located a suitable place. So when Abhai told him about the building in Jhansi, he was interested. Abhai and Kesha Maharaj composed a letter to Mr. Bhayal, presenting their requests and the aims of their movement, and then traveled to Jhansi in a group, Abhai and Kesha Maharaj with his disciples. Kesha Maharaj and his party stayed for several days in Jhansi, holding kirtans and lectures. They had an appointment with Reva Shankar Bhayal, but Mr. Bhayal broke it, so they had to wait to see him on another day. Meanwhile, Kesha Maharaj had time to form an opinion of Jhansi and discuss with Abhai the likelihood of making this his headquarters. He noted that the people were receptive, but that the location was too remote. Even before meeting with Mr. Bhayal, Kesha Maharaj felt reluctant to stake his whole mission in Jhansi. Abhai agreed, aware that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had said that a preacher should go into the big cities and not practice his bhajan in seclusion. And he admitted that after 2 years in Jhansi, he made no full-time followers. When they finally met with Mr. Bayal failed to present clear terms for purchasing the property. He said they were eligible to buy it, but he made their use of the buildings conditional. He wanted to have a say in the nature of the programs they would hold. Bayal knew that this was just a further sign of shady dealings, and he suspected that Mr. Bayal was under mounting pressure to give the buildings over to the Mahila Samhiti. Kesha Maharaj, having lost all interest, decided to go back to Mathura. He invited Abai to join him. But Abai remained. Mr. Bayal wanted him out, and he even returned Abai's deposit of 210 rupees, claiming that Abai now had no justification for residing at the Bharati Bhavan. Abai noted down the latest events in his short history. 29. He's also given me a check for rupees 210 in lieu of my deposit money with him, but he has no money in the bank. The bank has returned it with remark. 30. The money which was given to him was misappropriated by him for his own purpose, and now he has given a false check with an arrangement with the bank. 31. It is plain cheating to me from the beginning. It is plain cheating to me from the beginning to the end. 32. I must be compensated for all the money before I can leave the buildings. But he saw it as the inscrutable will of Krishna. Events and opinions were turning him against conducting a mission in Jhansi. It no longer seemed auspicious. Srila Prabhupada. I wanted to start from there. It was a nice big house. It was not given to me rightly, but I was using. So somehow or other, she got imagination that this house is very nice. She was the governor's wife. Through collector and through governor officials, she made pressure. So of course, there were many lawyer friends. They advised me, you do not give up. But I thought, who's going to litigate? I thought, I have left my home. And now should I take up litigation? No, I don't want this house. Abai remembered how the Gaudiya Mutt preachers had extended their energy for years in the courts. Having terminated his long entanglement with family and business, he had no taste for a legal fight. He could have fought, but he remembered what Kesha Maharaj had said about Jhansi's being out of the way. Of course, the whole thing had just sprung up here. Otherwise, Abai would never have chosen to establish his worldwide league in such an obscure place. Right. You know, Bhaktisiddhanta wanted to go to the big cities where all the people were so he could get the maximum exposure to Krishna consciousness. But Jhansi had been invited, people were interested, and so it just happened on its own. So then, you know, Krishna's arrangement, Prabhupada took advantage to, you know, push on the mission. But now that it was becoming an obstacle, people were trying to take everything away, then now it's a matter of either you fight for it or you don't. So then one is, the Gaudiya Mutt had been fighting for years in the courts and had never gotten anywhere. And two, that why fight for something so far out of the way? You know, it had come on its own and now it was going on its own. So then Prabhupada decided, no, we won't keep the place. Right. Abai remembered how the Gaudiya Mutt preachers had expended their energy for years in the courts, having terminated his long entanglement with family and business. He had no taste for a legal fight. Oh, no, we already read that. The educated young men and women wished him well, just as they had good wishes for the Ladies' League, the Theosophy Society, the Arya Samaj, and many other causes. But their good intentions were certainly short of pure surrender and devotion. Even his one disciple could offer him only part-time help. But these considerations had not been sufficient to force him out. The real thing is he was being driven out. So even though they weren't responding so well, still, then it was, you know, he could see that it's, you know, still worth you try and this and that. Because everybody wished him well, but they wished everybody well. You know, anything that seemed a little bit either welfare-ish or philosophical, they liked, you know. So it's just Prabhupada's, you know, Krishna Consciousness Mission. It was just another nice thing happening in the city, but it wasn't that they were really committed to it or saw that this is something special or different or more important than other just welfare activities. Srila Prabhupada, if I did not leave, nobody would drive me. That was a fact, but I thought, who is going to litigate these things? It is the governor's wife, and she is pressing through collector. The manager who is in charge, he had some cinema house, so they had to renew the license. And the collector pressed him that unless you arrange for this house, we are not going to renew your license. I thought, unnecessarily this man will be in trouble. I will have to pay many rupees, and she is the governor's wife. He decided to leave. He told his friends to carry on the League of Devotees in his absence. They were sad to see him go, and yet even some of his friends openly praised the work of the Ladies' Society and were glad to see it come. They had not been able to help him financially, although they knew he had been unable to purchase the buildings on his own. His closer followers were more affected, but he assured them that their relationship would continue. He would write letters to them, Acharya Prabhakar, Radhelal Malak, Mr. Mitra, Dr. Shastri, and he gave them instructions on what they should do, especially Acharya Prabhakar. Abhay told him he would be calling for him and expecting him to continue as secretary of the League of Devotees, even if they didn't make Jhansi their main residence. Yet it was obvious that this chapter of making ambitious plans for a world movement, going from house to house and village to village, performing Sankirtana, lecturing on the Gita, distributing prasadam, this was ended. And it was not likely that he would return to that return or that the residents of Jhansi would expect to see him again. When Abhay left the Bharati Bhavan with its 6-foot-high letters, lettering, League of Devotees, painted across the outside wall, he felt sad. It had been a natural, spontaneous success for him. The young, educated people of Jhansi had looked up to him from the start, and it had not been for, and had it not been for the intrigue, he would never have left. But he felt he had no real choice. He had come as a family man on business, and was leaving as a homeless vanaprastha, forced to take shelter of Krishna. His plans were uncertain, but his desire was strong and his health good. So he moved on to Mathura, carrying with him the deity of Lord Chaitanya. Srila Prabhupada ki Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare